Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound for pound best radio show around the world. It's Leave It In the Ring. He took it from crack to rap. Now he put out two anthems a year, and I just want to rock for
centuries. Yo. I don't know if you guys got done watching the Gamboa versus Montagua, Montagua and Lopez versus Lou Lebano. I got Rob Brother on the line. What's up, brother? Rob, you there? Oh, wait. I got you on mute, man. My bad and stuff. I got Chris and Rob Riddle on the line. What's up, brothers?
What's going What's on, man?
Nothing, man. I'm over here. You know what? I don't know, man. I mean, you know what? I was impressed with what Gamboa did. You know, I thought for sure Montagua had a much bigger chance of doing, maybe upsetting Gamboa, but seeing it, and you know what? And Chris, you left it on my Facebook because I didn't know about it. I was talking with Rob Riller about it earlier, but I didn't think it was going to make a big difference. But I think it did make a big difference. Him only coming in at 122.5 pounds, and Gamboa obviously coming in featherweight weight division at 126. You just saw that he was a lot stronger, was able to be more fluid, and Montagua just was not able to withstand those punches, man. I mean, I've seen his fights previously and already knowing that, yeah, his head is like a little, it's like one of those bobbles, you know what I mean, that go back and forth, you know, and you're not going to make a whole lot of concern about it, but obviously it was enough when the ref stepped in and halted the fight. What did you think about it, Chris?
You know, the weight thing was something that I was interested in seeing how it would factor in, because basically you had a featherweight going up against a super bantamweight. But it wasn't just that. It was the speed factor. I mean, Gamboa seemed to be lighting him up with everything he threw, and Montagua couldn't even really get close. I don't know what the punch stats were, final ones, but he really didn't put any punches on Gamboa at all. Just two different separate classes of fighters, in all honesty. I mean, Gamboa's talent level is light years beyond anything Montagua has to offer.
I liked how Gamboa showed professionalism and that he could fight a smart fight, but fight, you know, a very entertaining fight at the same time. You know, he didn't really get carried away. He was sort of mixing it up with the boxing and the, you know, and the combination of aggressive punching and, you know, so he didn't get too crazy and stuff, because when he was hurting when he was hurting Montagua in the first round, I was like, oh, my God, he might get overconfident and get knocked out in the second, you know, and then he was backing off a little bit. But you know.
Yeah, and that's something I did see. He showed a little bit of maturity. You know what I mean? Not getting overzealous in his punching stat. You know, but he was landing like five punch combinations, and his hand speed, like Chris just mentioned right now, it is something just to be like, damn, that guy is just quick. You know, and I did say, you know, he fights. His punches always come in really awkward angles. You know, with Gamboa, but to see him blow out Montagua the way he did, you know, it's got to kind of embed inside of Lopez's head just a little bit in the fashion. Yeah, and you know what? Lopez was right. A different weight class, two different type of fighters. But it still leaves you, like, thinking, wow.
I mean, Lopez just – Kellerman said it right emotionally. Emotionally, it does affect the fans, and you know, mentally, if you think about it, you can say the weight thing. But I mean, first of all, Lopez looked like shit tonight. I personally thought he looked like shit tonight. You know, I'm getting tired of this, you know, trying to brawl with somebody who doesn't really want to brawl, and then brawling horribly. Like, he's not even positioned to throw a punch, and then he throws it anyway. It's like, what the hell are you doing? Get in position, get your balance, and then throw it. He doesn't even want to do that anymore. He just wants to knock the dude out.
Exactly, though. And you know what? I got to say, we did not schedule this this the talk show. We didn't do anything like that. It was just out of the blue. I actually even called up Chris, like, what, 5 minutes ago, Chris? He said, hey, man, you want to do something on the air? You know, because it was an interesting fight to talk about, and I figured, why not talk about it, man, you know? And Chris was like, you want to do it? I was like, yeah, and I even called Blood up. Blood's like, yo, I'm about to jump in the shower real quick. I'll call as soon as I get out of there and stuff. So we didn't call Strikeheart, so we apologize, or Dave Chen. So this was just kind of a random thing, man. Just to kind of get on there and chop it up, and because we do talk about, you know, boxing.
What Dave is trying to say is that he called up the Latinos to hold it down tonight because he knew that the Latinos were going to roll through.
But if you want to call in and talk to us a little bit, man, chop it up. You know, we're going to have an hour and a half show, talk some boxing, and we didn't even have a chance to talk about Uma's fight and Kasim Uma, who a lot of people were saying, yo, he was a highway robbery in a lot of hardcore fight fans' opinion. You can call in at 347-215-7598, and we'd be willing to chop it up with you about anything. It's just an open panel right now. It doesn't really matter. We're willing to talk about anything you guys want to speak on. Let's do it. But going back, Chris, you were right about the weight issue. And before I could say, well, yeah, it could make a difference, obviously the fight made its difference when Gamboa was landing them shots. It still raises the question, does Juanma have the goods to stop Gamboa, or is Gamboa going to blow him out of the water? And, you know, Rob, I got to kind of disagree with you about Lopez. You know, Juanma looked good to me, in my opinion. Luevano obviously was no chump, no bum, no dude that anybody was going to walk over on, in my opinion. But I did say, yo, there's nothing there really, honestly, to keep Juanma humble, you know, to keep him at bay. And Juanma, to me, just reminds me so much of Tito Trinidad, but just a little bit, in my opinion, more polished. You know what I'm saying? Where maybe not the speed. Tito was a little bit quicker, but seeing the arsenal every weapon that this guy has in his arsenal, it just you got to admit it's something else. I mean, he throws body shots to uppercuts. He tries to throw everything that's out of the boxing textbook out there in every fight. He tries to figure your man out. And I was happy for a minute. I think on the second round, I was like, yo, Juanma, you need to settle down a little bit, son. You know, you need to kick back, you know, take a little step back before, you know, you keep blowing off that whole load. You know what I'm saying? And he did. He ended up settling down just a little bit, and he made it a little bit of a boring fight because you could even see the audience in the ringside. They were kind of like talking among each other because they thought maybe this was going to go all 12 rounds because Luevano showed that he had a durable chin. But that uppercut thrown by him that he was trying to land, he was just barely nicking, you know, Luevano. He finally planted it, rocked him, and it dropped him. And you know, Max Kellerman said it was not as impressive as Gamboa. And I would have to say I thought it was more impressive because of the way he was dropped. Chris?
I mean, obviously the level – I don't know. It's funny because they did question the level of opposition, you know, Max pointed out that maybe Lopez had a tougher foe in front of him, but it's hard to say that when Lopez fought the same guy in his last fight. You know, I didn't know what to expect. I haven't seen much of Luevano, which is why I really didn't have a real solid breakdown of this fight beforehand, unlike yourself. But Luevano gave a good account of himself. Lopez, you know, I mean, I think people forget this is his first fight at featherweight, you know. So he was moving up a division. He is fighting a title holder, you know, whether it's a guy we know a lot about or not. The guy only has one loss. The guy's, you know, held the title for a minute now. So I thought it was a pretty good solid fight. You know, Lopez was just kind of getting in his groove. Early on, it was a back-and-forth fight. Actually, you know, I know it may not have been the most exciting fight, but it was pretty intriguing to me because Luevano, you know, was holding his own in there. You know, he was using the outside, working well, and then Lopez was just trying to get comfortable and trying to really establish himself and, you know, work them hooks and them power shots. He couldn't just overwhelm and blow this guy away like he has a lot of his previous opponents. You know, and I was kind of wanting to see where the fight would go in the later rounds because people were questioning Lopez after his last fight, you know, down the stretch. And, you know, once he started having success, he started breaking this kid down. You could see Luevano slowing down in the latter rounds, and, you know, Lopez seemed to be taking it out of him. And, you know, he obviously that the beginning of the end came with that uppercut, you know, and Wanma jumped all over him, you know, and closed the deal. So I think even though it may not have been as spectacular performance as Gamboa's, I think it was equally impressive.
Well, Kellerman right there, you know, what Kellerman meant was, you see, you have a guy like Mitagua who almost knocked out Wanma, and since he almost knocked out Wanma, that gave him an aura of danger for Gamboa, and Gamboa stopping him made that fight a little bit more exciting, but it doesn't mean the knockout itself was as impressive as the Wanma knockout, since the Wanma knockout was really all of a sudden. And Gamboa, after a while, you sort of knew it was a moment, it was like, you know, a matter of time, but Wanma really just happened all of a sudden. Like, I'm like, oh my God, is Wanma going to lose this fight now? Is he going to lose this fight now? You know, I was like getting pissed. I was talking to my friends. I was like, this is some bullshit. Wanma had a good performance. There's just things in that fight that does not tell me he can really get on the inside with Gamboa and mess around with Gamboa a little too much. He'll have to fight a perfect fight to beat Gamboa, in my opinion.
Well, I don't know. You know what I mean? Obviously, you gotta admit that Gamboa's hands, it's the obvious is there for Gamboa. The hand speed, what this kid can do, yeah, it's all there. You know, there's no denying that. Wanma is definitely a very technical, sound fighter, meaning that when you look at a textbook guy or a guy that you're looking at, like, okay, this is what you're looking for, you know, this is what you want, then you're absolutely right. That's what most coaches kind of gear up for, is somebody to have all those type of to-the-point perfection in throwing punches. Gamboa is the opposite. He's the guy that most trainers would say, don't do that. That's not going to work. You're going to end up getting hurt. And really, honestly, Gamboa's style, it is dynamic as it is and exciting that it is, really, honestly, it spells as a recipe of you're going to get knocked out eventually. Somebody's going to have your number. And I think that's what everybody, and I even mentioned this in the video, was I think that's what we're all waiting for, is this is a possibility that it might happen. You know, and I thought really Roger was going to be able to bring that to the table, but, you know, Gamboa obviously proved me wrong in that by blowing him out and hand speed and everything else. But he still has that style that's very beatable. And is he exciting? Yeah, he's hella exciting. That's why you want to sit and watch, because I think in Gamboa's fight, you never know what's going to happen. With Lopez, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different. Because if you watch the kid, he's obviously he's been blessed with the gifts of being technically sound as a boxer. Gamboa has been gifted with the natural gifts of an athlete, which are two different things. I don't know. Chris, am I making any sense here?
No, you are. I mean, you know what's funny is, a year ago, if this fight, when people initially started talking about it, I heavily favored Wanma just because he is a good athlete, but he just seemed to be a little bit technically sharper, and Gamboa was, I mean, the guy is on another level, like I said before, talent-wise, but he just seemed so reckless in there, you know, which is kind of surprising when you take into consideration his extensive amateur background, but he really looks like he's tightening things up. Man, his skills, his hand speed is unbelievable. I mean, so is his whole body speed, but he kind of reminds me of Roy Jones back in the day, where they would take guys out, not because they had a lot of power in their hands, but they could mix their power with their speed, and just guys couldn't see those shots coming. You know, so Gamboa is definitely much more gifted athletically than Lopez, but I do think Lopez is a little more better skilled technically. So, you know, it's an intriguing fight. You know, it's a fight. I don't think they're going to fight next. I believe that Aaron wants to put him in each and one more fight beforehand, but it's a fight I really am, you know, interested in seeing.
I think it's what goes back to what Dave said about the Wanma being textbook and Gamboa not really being a textbook fighter. But I think that I just see that Wanma, every time he throws his right hooks and wants to exchange a right hook with somebody, he eats some nasty ass hook, and he is lucky that Luvano don't got no punching power. Because Wanma would have been on his ass if Luvano had punching power. or a little bit more speed. Because, I mean, it just gets to the point where it's a textbook style versus a style that's not really textbook. And, you know, I just think that Gamboa will be a little bit too awkward for Juanma to you know, use that style again. He's going to be looking for those precise punches, those punches in the certain spots that are not really going to be there until they get into an exchange. And the hand speed of Gamboa is a little too fast for Juanma to be exchanging with.
Yep. You know, and like I said, this was a unscheduled boxing show. We decided just to do it, just for fun, man, just to get on here and chop it up and talk to, you know, talk about the fight that happened. And, you know, Luevano, I kind of felt bad for him. I got to admit, I felt a little bad for him because you saw that he was really, really there to do something. He wanted to really take it. And being that it was Lopez Juanma's first fight moving up to 126 and getting the shot of the champion, you kind of fell for the Luevano because the fact is, even though he's naturally should be an orthodox fighter, but he's been converted to a conventional fighter, you know, his leading hand, meaning that his leading hand is his power hand, you saw that. Even though his leading hand, it just wasn't doing nothing for him. You know, he was trying to set things up with his jab. He was trying to land a thumping jab, but Juanma was not just allowing that to be the factor. He wasn't allowing him to dictate it. He was making sure he was taking complete control of the rounds. And even though Letterman, I like Howard Letterman. I mean, he does sometimes, I mean, well, I think every hardcore fight fan could say we kind of disagree with him sometimes in a lot of the stuff that he says, but he was giving Lopez a shutout pretty much fight card. And I was like, no, there was a little bit more. I thought out of all those rounds, I thought maybe Luevano had three rounds more. I mean, you know, three rounds out of what he gave him two. And I thought, too, you know, having Garcia on this corner, Garcia was, and you know, I don't know, was it me that I thought Garcia was not giving him any type of advice? He was just trying to build encouragement with him stepping in with Lopez. He was just trying to be more of a cheerleader rather than a head coach, Rob.
They were giving him advice you really give a fighter in the later rounds, like telling him to make himself smaller. I mean, first of all, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. They had a great, you know, start. The start was great. I was like, oh, my God. You know, Juanma is getting close, a little too many jabs. You know, that jab is getting a little too close to his face. You know, if Luevano can keep this up, he might take a victory. Kept going. Then I started hearing him say, get lower. You know, and usually when you have a guy like Luevano who has stamina issue, you don't really want to tell him to get lower because if you have been in the ring, you know that getting lower takes a lot more stamina when adding movement onto that. And they tell him, get lower, don't stay on the ropes. And this guy was moving his ass all over the ring, you know, just basically gassing out. And, you know, the round after they told him to get lower, he got on the inside of Juanma, and he had a great round, but you could tell that he was only on the inside because he was gassed. And I was like, okay, well, you know, there goes his chance at winning because this dude just gassed himself out for listening to his corner. You know, I mean, you know, then again, the fighter should know what he's doing in the ring and what feels comfortable at the moment and then know when to change. But, you know, there's times to be loyal and there's times to do your own thing. And, you know, Luevano started great, you know, then listened to his corner and, you know, he got knocked the fuck out.
Chris, what do you think, brother? What do you got?
No, Rob said it all. I mean, there was that round. I believe it might have been the fifth or the sixth. When Luevano started working inside, he actually started going to the body a little bit more, and he was having more success. I thought once he got on the inside, Lopez was going to start tearing him apart, but Luevano actually, it looked like he started to, in that round, kind of establish his size and kind of, you know, try to push and bully Lopez around and, you know, just impose himself on him. And he looked like he was pushing Lopez back a little, but yeah, his corner didn't give him the best directions. You know, he had success at that round. Lopez, how you said Letterman was kind of giving him a shutout, I didn't agree with that either. You know, Lopez kind of closed out a couple of the rounds strong, or I thought Luevano had got the better of the majority of those rounds. There was probably two rounds for sure. Lopez just closed him out stronger. But, you know, I don't know if even if he would have had the proper instructions, if he would have been able to pull the fight out. As I said, you know, it just seemed like Lopez's punches were having more effect. You know, Luevano was boxing good in there, but he really wasn't doing anything to haul Lopez, even though he was catching him. He just didn't really have enough pop on his punches to really keep Lopez off him. And you could see, you know, on his face and also in his body language that Lopez's punches were taking a little bit, you know, bit by bit out of Luevano.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, you know. And even at times, Luevano was being successful when he would throw, his right hook or even a leading left, which he was trying to set up. But the problem was that Lopez, to me, really honestly, he was more fluent. He was a little bit more confident, which I really thought that was going to be the major factor of the fact that Luevano has nothing to keep anybody humble, you know, and he's been dropped before, and he's had stamina problems a lot. And even though in this fight he showed no type of stamina problems, he just showed that, you know what, you're going to be another opponent, unfortunately. And that's exactly what it ended up panning out to be, was Lopez needed somebody to be in there with him to give him the rounds and the confidence. And being in Madison Square Garden, where he was having a huge support system there, you know, having Cotto and Chito Trinidad and a lot of the Puerto Rican fans out there, it just boosted it up even more, you know. And I got to say, I mean, I know Rob's saying, you know, he didn't look that great. I have to say, I thought he looked fantastic. I like what I saw out of him.
Oh, no, I mean, it's just, I liked what I saw because, you know, he didn't show, you know, usually guys after a knockout, like, not a knockout, but like a close victory, like after that, they're tentative, they change their style completely. But it's just some things that he was doing, like how he was getting off balance, he was just walking into certain shots, he was, you know, it was just some stuff, and he seemed to get frustrated at times, and I was just like, you know, I don't know if it's because he expects a lot from himself, which could be that he expects a certain performance from himself, and when he doesn't get that performance, he tends to get a little bit frustrated and fight a certain way. But it was just the mistakes that he was making, like getting off of balance from a shot. He really, like, Lopez does not believe in, like, those, you know how a fighter takes the power off the shots just to set a big power shot? He doesn't really seem to believe in that. He just likes these clubbing. He has these clubbing, like he has an axe in his hand or something like that, where he's just trying to club the shit out of somebody.
Well, yeah, he's got that. Well, you know what it is, though? He has that type of he throws those punches like he's chopping wood. You know, and really, I mean, I like that. You know, I do like that because it just shows that being that he is a pure puncher, you know, and I don't know who would be. I don't know who's the bigger puncher. I was talking to Blood about this right before we did the radio show, and you know, Blood goes, yo, what do you think, man? You think, out of the two guys right now, what do you see? And I said, you know, man, it's hard to say out of both the guys right now who would win this particular fight. But if you had to ask me at this moment, no matter what, even though I have said numerous times I'm a fan of Juan Ma, I would buy stock in that kid. I would have to say, just because of the fact that Juan Ma is more technically sound and doesn't have a lot of special effects and his hand speed's very modern, he would have problems with Gamboa for the first 1 to 4 rounds. I think that Gamboa would have a bigger chance in the early rounds to knock him out, where Juan Ma would have to weather the storm like the way Montagua did in order to be successful. And that's where Montago failed, that he was not able to be successful in the early rounds. And we saw what happened. And Lopez would be in the same type of boat, sailing down the same type of ocean and facing the same type of ripples and waves crashing at his boat, that he would have to hope that it's going to be very durable for when Gamboa is going to crash, you know, crash those waves into that boat. It's gay. Hopefully it's not brittle, because if it is, then you're going to see a remake of what happened to Montagua. And Montagua was no slouch. This guy was a really complete contender. And we saw what Gamboa's hand speed and power mixed in all that in those two ingredients. We saw exactly what was able, what was the capabilities of Gamboa, what he was able to bring to the table. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't know, man. We haven't seen enough of Gamboa. You know, Montagua was a good test for him, but once again, Montagua was basically a bantamweight tonight, you know, or a super bantamweight. So
right.
I do hope that, you know, they do get one more fight in between. I do hope Gamboa fights, you know, a pretty credible, you know, legitimate, maybe top 10, top 15 featherweight, just to see where he's at, you know, just to make sure he's someone that can really test him. You know, because if he does go up against Lopez, Lopez is a little more seasoned. Lopez has been through more of a test. Sure, Gamboa's been knocked down before, you know, but he was facing guys that he should have blown out, which he ended up doing ultimately. So I do want to see Gamboa get just a little bit tougher of a test first, because, you know, it's easy for us to jump to conclusions after a guy has just a spectacular performance. We do it all the time, you know. That's how we are as fight fans, or as fans in general, you know. But you don't want to jump too far ahead, you know, and just based off of this one performance against a guy that, you know, in hindsight was probably tailor-made for Gamboa.
You know, you're right, man. And like I said, you know, it's a fight that we definitely got to see. And I think it's going to be a fight that's going to be under the radar, just like most fights. HBO is doing a fantastic job of building it up. And, you know, the more and more that they do it, the more and more, obviously, it's gonna build a fan base behind it. And I hope that they don't put all their money and their chips into the Pacquiao versus, you know, hopefully against Mosey or Mayweather. Or there's really been talk of May 1st or May 8th being the date for Mosey versus Mayweather, because Gamboa and Lopez is truly a friendly fight for a lot of hardcore fight fans out there, you know, that want to see something explosive. You know, Puerto Rico versus Cuba. And really, I don't know. I mean, I can't really remember ever a rivalry of that magnitude with these two countries really stepping in the ring. I mean, it's got to be explosive. And it's going to have to be in the East Coast. You got to kind of say it's going to be pretty crazy out there if that fight materializes, when it materializes. And I think it's down that road, it's going to materialize, how the atmosphere is going to be. You know what I'm saying?
What they should do is, I mean, because really, to be honest, guys like Chris John, I think Juan Ma or Gamboa would tear Chris John apart, to be honest. I don't think Chris John has it in him to beat those guys. And anybody else in this weight class, I mean, you know, Celestino is good, but Juan will probably have a little bit of trouble with Celestino, but Gamboa will probably beat the shit out of him like in 6 or 8 rounds, something like that, you know. So, I mean, HBO could quite possibly take a risk and get these guys at the top, at the peak of their division, and then put them together early next year. But I think HBO is going to get a little bit impatient, and probably late this year we're going to see it, or maybe within a few months, possibly.
In a few months, it may be, you know, in a few months, yeah, you're right and stuff. I don't know. I thought maybe it could have been a little bit premature starting up this. Because, you know, I hate to see fights happen a little too fast. You know what I'm saying? Where it's rushed and it really takes away what the potential of this fight could have been if you just might have waited just a little longer, a little bit longer. But there's been some fights that a fighter been rushed a little bit too early. Like, I'll give you a perfect example, and I know I bring up this guy. I use this guy, this fighter, as a huge example for a lot of things, and I think Chris will agree with me. Fernando Vargas, you know, where I had thought, okay, this is absolutely a little too rushed, but it was rushed enough to keep us satisfied, to keep us happy. You know what I'm saying, Chris?
Yeah, but with these guys, you know, Gamboa's not exactly, even though he's got a, you know, his record's only like 14-0, I believe, or something along that line. You know, he's not a young guy. He's like, what, I think 26, 27, 28, 29, somewhere around that range. You know, because he got the late start in the pros, and, you know, Juanma Lopez, even though he's still a young cat, he's, like I said before, he's a seasoned veteran now. Do I think they'd be jumping the gun? Maybe, but you don't want to take a chance of losing this fight. You know, like I said, one more fight and then make it at the end of this year, you know, while these guys are really establishing themselves. There's no one else really at that weight class for him aside from Chris John, but even then, that's not really a big marquee fight. You know, that's mainly a fight for hardcore fans if either of those guys fight him. And, you know, even if we get the fight too soon, this could be like a long-term rivalry. You know, this could be, you know, if it ends up being a really exciting fight or a close fight, it could be, you know, a rematch. I mean, it could be, they mentioned it before at the beginning of the telecast. I believe when Morales and Barrera first fought, I think it was a featherweight as well, you know, and that ended up, the first fight was on HBO, Boxing After Dark, and we got an awesome trilogy over, you know, a few years. Maybe the first time they fight, it could lead to a rematch or even a trilogy. So, you know, I'd rather just get to it while we can, you know, and just see where it goes from there.
You're right, man. You know, let me ask you this, because, you know, obviously I want to get away from that fight, you know, and talk about a little bit from a fight that we didn't have a chance, because last week we had so many things that popped off. And I didn't even have a chance to see that fight, too, to tell you the truth, because I remember you talking to me about it, and I was like, yo, I didn't see that fight. I just didn't have enough time, you know, to put it in. But we had him on the radio show, Kasim Uma, you know, and had him on the radio show, and a lot of people have emailed said, Dave, did you see the fight? Ruff, did you see the fight? And I was like, no, I didn't have a chance to see that fight, you know. I wish I would have saw that fight, and it's going to be re-aired again on Sunday, and I'll have the chance to watch it. But I heard that Uma really pulled it off, and I'm checking out some chat room. Yo, Ruff, why was this show out of the blue, brother? Because I told you. I called you. I told you because, you know, it's red. You know, asking why it's out of the blue. Well, Red, because, brother, because the whole fact is it was just out of the blue. I mean, what else can I say? It was out of the blue, man. I see my boy T-Money.
That's 97 rough style right there.
Exactly. You know, I see my boy T-Money on here, man, and a couple of Chris, you know, see at least three other people that I haven't seen and stuff yet. I mean, you know what, out of the blue. Really, honestly, it was nothing really to advertise. It was just for us to kind of chop it up. Hardcore Fight Fans, you know, just kind of getting on the line and talking about some fights. And I figured, why not, man? You know, it's Saturday night, feeling good, kicking back, watching the fights, having a couple brewskis, eating some barbecue ribs that I made. Why not just, you know, get on the radio show and do some stuff? Oh, let me see. The Elite One, what's up, brother? Thanks for coming through. And, let me see. Yeah, and guest 4074, thanks for coming through, brother. And like I said, man, it was just really quick. Do something, get on here. I see my boy from the Elite One talking about, do we talk about MMA? We do talk about MMA. And we're actually going to get into talking about some MMA tonight, because I got some questions about some MMA stuff that are popping off that has been scheduled from the Strikeforce and everything else. So, but I want to go real quick, Kasim Uma, Chris, break down the fight and tell me exactly what was the take of it. I mean, give me a picture-perfect type of view, a vision of what happened that night with Kasim Uma.
Kasim Uma looked like a vintage Kasim Uma. Anyone that's seen Uma fight back in the day in his prime, you know, against, let's say, Verno Phillips, or even in the Jermaine Taylor fight, guy that throws a lot of punches, never stops coming forward, doesn't have a lot of power to his punches. He just keeps coming forward and throwing punches, has a high work rate. You know, and it depends on whether or not you can stand up to that. And Modest Rosen, or however you pronounce his name, Vanis, you know, he's a young guy. He was a bigger dude. He was a lot bigger. He had the height. He had the reach. He seemed to be a better athlete. He was, you know, working the jab. He had a little bit more power, but it almost seemed like he wasn't ready for this step up in opposition. I think a top rank maybe assumed that Kasim was a little bit past his prime. You know, if you look at his record as of late, it appeared to be so, but Kasim had a little bit more left in the tank than what they were expecting, in my opinion. And Kasim was just all over him doing what Kasim Uma does, you know. Now, Monterosian definitely had his rounds here and there, you know. It was a close fight, but I just think that Kasim really confused this kid. This kid just didn't expect what was coming at him. this veteran coming at him, he didn't know how to deal with it, you know. He started getting a little frustrated here at times, you know, you could tell. He was trying a little couple dirty tactics, and it just seemed to me that Kasim was getting the better of the majority of the rounds. You know, granted, this kid would land some harder shots here and there, but he couldn't overcompensate for the work and the punches that Uma was landing. And as a matter of fact, Kasim knocked him down. I believe it was in the eighth round. Now, Vanez did something I'd never seen before. He did one of these, he just completely jumped up from his back, kicking his legs up like something you'd see in pro wrestling or something, and he wasn't hurt by the shot. You know, but regardless, he went down, and I thought that pretty much sealed the deal for Uma. You know, if you looked at these fighters' faces after the fight was over, it clearly looked to me that Uma had pulled it out, aside from what I saw in the ring. And the scorecards were a joke, you know. Once they announced the first scorecard, and it was a unanimous decision of like 97-93, I knew that it was going to be a ripoff, you know. And I believe one of the judges had a 98-92, was a 10-round fight, you know, basically 8 rounds of 2, and this is, you know, with Kasim getting the only knockdown of the fight. I don't know. It was just a joke, in my opinion. And I couldn't agree with the cards at all. I mean, it was a close fight, but the scores themselves were completely ridiculous. No, Kasim didn't even get a fair shake. And it's just an unfortunate situation, you know, especially after we talked to him and, you know, seeing how much passion the guy has for the sport. I just really felt bad for him. You know, I felt like no matter what he would have done in that fight, aside from knocking this kid out, he wouldn't have got a win.
Bob, do you have a chance to watch that fight, brother?
Oh, no. I was busy masturbating to be that Guerra Pictures.
You're a what?
Don't ask that question again. You don't want to know his answer.
No, I thought I heard his answer. I'm pretty sure I heard his answer, man.
He was just shocked. He didn't expect that one right there.
Oh, man. That's funny as hell, dog. Well, listen, man, we're going to take a quick break.
Hold on, real quick, man, while we're on it, man. There was a lot of boxing news that popped off yesterday. There was like 3 matches that came out of the woodwork. You know, we got the Yusef Mack-Glenn Johnson fight that was supposed to be on the undercard of Moldy Berto. That got moved to February 5th, Friday night fight. So that's a fight I'm really looking forward to. You know, I want to see what Glenn has left. And Yusef Mack's making a name in that division, light heavyweight. You also got everyone assumed Alan Green was going to fight Saki Obika for the spot in the Super 6 168 tournament. Well, apparently not. Alan Green got the slot, and he's slated to face Andre Ward. And
Also,
there was a fight made between, I believe it's tentatively signed between Chad Dawson and John Pascal for, I think it's either May or June. I've seen Chad Dawson post that on his Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Hold on, man. Let's see what else we got on the line real quick. And then I want to talk about about those fights that you just mentioned. Area code 443. What's up, brother? What's on your mind?
It's David Chan. What's going on?
What's up, brother? Man, I didn't have a chance to call you and all that because we just decided to do it like 3 minutes before the show started. And so
yeah, man, I got you.
No, I'm serious, man. And I was like, damn, we didn't have a chance to, call you or, you know, strike heart. And to let you guys know and stuff, man. But what's up, man? So what did you think about the fight that happened tonight? And obviously we'll go back and talk about what Chris just mentioned right now. What was your take about Gamboa, Mantagua? Obviously I was wrong about Mantagua. I thought that maybe he was going to be able to weather the storm. I was not surprised. You know, I know some people are like, you know, you're wrong about the prediction. Hey, no big, I don't care. You know, but the point is that I wasn't surprised that Gamboa got the win. You know, I just thought maybe Mantagua was going to be able to bring a little bit more, but I really thought the weight was an issue there. I didn't think it was originally. I was like, nah, I don't think so, man. I'll be lying because I know I told Rob Riller in the morning and even Strike, I'm like, I really don't think it's going to be because the fact that Gamboa does leave himself open to get clipped a little bit. But, Dave, what's your take?
It's funny, though, because a surprising amount of people were going with Rodgers Mantagua to be able to hurt Gamboa because, you know, the way Gamboa has been fighting. And, you know, that's just one of those things where, you know, Mantagua looked so good in the last fight. I mean, I wouldn't say looked so good, but, you know, he definitely grabbed some attention. You know, he almost derailed Juanma Lopez, so a lot of people were giving him the shot. But I'm sure most, if not everybody, would have simply changed their prediction had they saw that he weighed in as a junior featherweight, and he's fighting against
Gamboa like that, and it's not going to happen, you know. And right. My reason for picking Gamboa is just that he's so offensively minded and he's so effective at it that I would never pick somebody against him whose only advantage is having a chin at a lower weight class. You know, that was the logic I went with. Now, one thing I will say, though, about the main event with Wilma Lopez and Steven Luemeno, I thought Luemeno was going to win a decision. Obviously, I'm way wrong. But the thing is, I thought Luemeno had a certain way, a certain plan that he could have used to give Wilma trouble, but I don't know if he was going to be able to get a victory from that, and he definitely didn't do it. He didn't even fight like the guy that you're used to seeing. Maybe he's fading nowadays because he's getting older, I'm not sure, but he didn't fight a very good fight. He didn't even stick to the plan that I thought was working for a round or two, and that's just what happened. I mean, he should have never stood in there and fought with Wilma. You know, he should have known that when he got bruised up already towards the middle round, before that one shot really hurt him, you know, before he really got, you know, the fight taken out from under him. So, pretty interesting, though. I thought Gamboa looked real good, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on Wilma now. You know, you're fighting in the man's division. It's one division higher than yours, and he just blew out the guy that almost, killed you. So, you know, this fight's going to happen, but it's going to be interesting because I think Gamboa's going to be favored.
I think so, too. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be favored if him and Wilma and Gamboa stepped into the ring. Like I said, I was... I don't know if I could say I was completely impressed by Gamboa. And I know I'm going to hear it already. I can already hear people say, "Oh man, you're hating on Gamboa." That's not true. I'm not hating on him. You know, but just like a lot of fighters out there, there's questions out there. Wilma obviously was able to answer some questions that I had about him that I was wondering, and he obviously answered them for me when he stepped in with Montagua. Yeah, okay, grant that, you know, Montagua was blown out by Gamboa, but I still want to see Gamboa go into the trenches a little bit. I still want to see him get some mud underneath the feet. That's exactly what I'm looking for. You know, and
well, you think it's a bit like Tommy Hearns back in the day where, you know, he's just so offensive, he's so effective against guys, you know, where it's like, you know, you won't really get to see him tested until he basically fails. But who in that division can really do it? You know what I mean?
That's just it. Who really in the division right now can do it? That's the question. Can Wilma really do it? I don't know. I mean, I think the arguing factor of it is Wilma a much more technically sound, better fighter? Yeah, by far. You know, the guy definitely brings a lot of boxing skills. And like I was mentioning earlier, when you go into a gym and you're barely starting, those are the type of skills that a coach is trying to embed inside you. He's trying to push in you that you have a polished fighter. Gamboa style is a style that a lot of trainers do not want to see you perform because you leave a lot of holes in your game. You become more like a Swiss cheese. Too many holes in your game where you're bound not to be successful. So you're absolutely right. I mean, there's your arguing points of what you like and what you think is going to be successful. Careless, reckless, go all out and just go for the gusto type of fighter. That's Gamboa. Technically sound, I have to have a game plan and follow my game plan and be kind of down the line type of style. That's going to be Wilma. Which one do you like? Which one do you pick? And you know what? Which one do you like? And which one do you pick? You know, and if you're listening and checking out the show, you can call in at 347-215-7598 and tell me which one do you like and which one do you pick. Like I said,
you know what, Dave? It's interesting because I'll say this real quick. You know, if you notice when he was fighting Montagua, you know he does. You know he's getting open, throwing those really quick shots of his. But he was getting tagged. It seems almost like they're trading punches where he would get hit, but he would just hit Montagua harder. Right, and like Montagua would like be the one backing up and reeling from the exchange. So yeah. I mean, it's easy to figure out what would beat Gamboa. You know, he's not a puzzle. It's basically somebody who can take his punch, weather the storm, and be able to hit him hard enough to put him on his pants. But the problem is that's easier said than done. Like, you know, you gotta find somebody who can physically be able to do that. And I have a hard time thinking who that might be in that division.
Oh, man, I got to agree with you. I do have a hard time thinking who would be the guy in that division and stuff. And I tell
wait
you what.
Wait till Nate Campbell cuts down to 129. Let me stop.
Nate Campbell. Hey, man, I think Nate Campbell can go all the way down to 119 and face everybody all the way up to You're right. We're going to come right back. You know, I think we need to take a real quick break. I know I got to take a quick break and stuff because, like I said, I made some ribs, man, and had some mashed potatoes and having a couple brewskis. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're going to take a really, really, really quick break. But right now, man, we're going to leave you with a skit. Mike Tyson calling Buster Douglas, asking him for a rematch.
Yeah, hello. Is this Buster Douglas? Yeah, well, don't worry about who it is. Yeah, it's a unanimous caller. Yeah, look, I'm just a fan who's a little concerned about your career right now. Yeah, I saw the fight you had with Mike Tyson. You beat him pretty bad. You know, I think you should fight him again. Yeah, like tomorrow. What? All right, so it's me, yeah, so what? Well, how'd you know I disguise my voice? Come on, Buster, you gonna fight me or what? Oh, please. Come on, it's not going too good with the broads, man. Well, just loan me the belt for the weekend. Wait, great, fine. I'm giving Robin's mother your number.
I don't know if you guys remember In Living Color. Some of you guys are probably not even born at that time, or if you were born in that time, you're probably still wearing diapers, because I know Rob Riller. And Rob, let me think.
This is like 89. I don't even know if Rob was around when that was out.
No, I was born in 1991.
Damn.
That's crazy. You guys are just some old ass motherfucker.
Boy, I'm telling you, man, 1991 bringing back some memories right there. You know what I'm saying?
Man, crazy.
Yeah. All right, Alan Green gets the spot, and we had Alan Green on the radio show talking about, because he was supposed to go in and have negotiations with them. And last time we had him on the radio show, he said, "I'm going to go in there and I got to talk to him." Because there was the potential of Jermaine Taylor not being able to continue in this Super 6 tournament. I had said, listen, he needs to step out. The kid obviously has been knocked out twice in a fashion of a later round. And it didn't seem anymore that why keep taking this? You're still young. You got a family. You got kids. You got everything else going for you. Why continue putting your life at risk for a game you've already made money off? Enjoy your fruits. Watch the game as we are watching it now in the outside, not in the inside, where you're receiving those lethal punches that can permanently have you talking punch drunk. You know what I mean? Where a lot of fighters have ended up, you know, and be in that short end of the stick, where they're no longer able, they can function mentally, but when it comes to talking, they're no longer. It's really difficult to understand. And when you hear that, you know, we have had a couple of fighters come on leaving the ring, or I've interviewed them face-to-face on camera, and you can tell they're slurring. They don't sound as, what is the word I'm looking for, man? Coherent. And yeah, exactly. You know, where they used to be. They're not as sharp. They're not as snap at the moment where maybe at the age of 20, in the beginning or mid of the career, of the pinnacle of the career, they were able to be on point. The point has gotten dull later in their career because they decided to sign on a little too long, too late in their career. And that sometimes, you know, it just can sadden you because the sport does have a little bit too many of them in it, you know, unfortunately. You know, MMA obviously is a very new sport, but having the chance to have, I've interviewed Chuck Liddell, me and Chris, in Folsom, California, which is nearby Sacramento. And Chris, we got to admit, you know, the Iceman was a little punch drunk. It was a little hard to understand at moments. And sometimes you just kind of had to sit there and go, this guy's taking a little bit too many punches.
Yeah, that's something I've heard about Chuck Liddell in the past. And having spoke with him, you know, in person, you could definitely sense it. You know, you could definitely sense the difference in speech. You know, even with the guy, you know, I think the most notable guy at the moment, if you've seen him talk, is even though he's not thankfully fighting at the moment, Riddick Bowe. You know, that's a guy that even 5 years ago was slurring his words. So, you know, why take the risk? But, you know, the funny thing with Jermaine Taylor is it sounded like even after DiBella left him because he didn't want him to continue, he was still going to go on with it. Now, the strong rumor in the boxing circle is that Showtime gave him walkaway money. I don't know if that's been confirmed. I mean, I don't think Taylor's going to say for sure, but that's the rumor. Because from what I've seen Taylor saying, he was still preparing for the fight, but word is Showtime gave him stepway money. Regardless if that's the case or not,
you know what?
If he was,
so what? I mean, you know what? I mean, the kid deserved it, you know? I think every time, I mean, nobody can take nothing away from Jermaine Taylor that he gave his all. If you were not even a fan of Jermaine Taylor and he got into the ring and you were rooting against him, you got to kind of sit there and admit, hey, he gave it his all. Yeah, did he fight a lot of smaller guys moving up in weight? But the honest truth is that it's not his fault. It's what his team is providing for him, what they're negotiating. A lot of the time, the fighters, they just fight. That's their job. You know, Dave Chim?
No, you're absolutely right about that. I mean, Jermaine Taylor has nothing to be ashamed of, you know, like him or not. You know, when you look at fighters today, he's done his job as a fighter. You know, what can a man do other than, you know, get all the belts in the division and fight, you know, whoever is in front of him, win or lose, you know, until he can't go on anymore.
Yep. And Alan Green is absolutely, I would have to say,
garbage.
Oh, man, no, not garbage. Come on. garbage.
Man, they gave Taylor set-aside money. They need to give Alan Green some set-aside money. I don't want to see him in this corner.
What they need to do is give Lucien Bute some step-in money.
You got to admit, Alan Green is absolutely, he's got a punch. He could turn over a fight, and you may be, I mean, okay, Rob, I think you got a point. Yeah, he's not the most gifted out of all those guys right now, from Andre Durrell, who is the young buck out of the whole crew, who is surprisingly he's the more gifted out of all those guys when it comes to athleticism, but is he completely hit his peak of where he can be at right now at this moment? I think he's close to it. I don't think he's there yet, but Allen is a veteran. He's got a good punch. I think he could turn over any type of fight he steps in the ring with. But is he going to have a run for his money overall every time he steps in the ring with a Frost, Durrell, a Ward, and even Arthur Abraham? Yeah. Could he be successful? I think so. I mean, even facing Andre Ward, who had a fantastic run over, you know, Mikael Kessler, which really, honestly, in a lot of people's opinion, including mine, he gave Mikael Kessler a boxing lesson, you know, even though there was some things that some fight fans were not completely sold on and a little bit disappointed and upset about because of the holding and the head coming forward. Can Alan Green be successful against Ward? I think he could because of that punch alone. That punch can turn the fight around. You know, and when you have a punch like that, you can make miracles happen, Chris.
I got a flashback of him looking at his shoes against Edison Miranda. Kind of fucking flashback of that, picturing it against Ward.
I think we did ask him about that. Didn't we ask him about him looking at his shoes? Like, why did you look at your shoes? Chris, did we ask him that?
I think someone did, because Rob kept mentioning it in the chat room. Rob's always getting on him about that. But I don't recall what his response was. He didn't do it in his last couple fights, but I think the biggest problem with fans, you know, is going to be, unfortunately for Alan Green, he's coming into this fight off that Sims fight. He really looked underwhelming against Sims, who was like a last-minute replacement and a guy that was undersized. You know, Green just didn't look impressive at all in that fight. So I think no one's really going to give him any chance at all against Andre Ward in this next fight.
I see him with a good matchup against Carl Froch and maybe Kessler, because I don't know if Kessler's just not focused, because Kessler is like, you know, he's like the golden boy where he's from. You know, he's famous. He can't walk out on the street without other girls trying to touch his dick, you know. So, you know, he's pretty famous, and maybe he just does not focus on it. So he can catch Kessler, maybe, not focused. Frosch, of course, because Frosch is like, you know, that's the other guy that needs step aside money, you know. I don't even know how he got a title. But then, yeah, he fought Taylor, so there's my answer. But, you know, I mean, that's my view on it. Carl Froch and Green's a good matchup, but Green against anybody else, I mean, that's like rape. Andre Ward's going to rape.
Well, Green, I think you're right. Green with anybody else in the match right now is going to be, he's going to be the underdog. But, I mean, like every other underdog that has a punch, they got a chance to turn it around and make you go, holy shit, you know, what was that? But, you know, like every great fighter, I'm not saying he's a great fighter, but every fighter's got one fight left in their system. Green may have that. We may be surprised a little bit. There's nothing impossible in boxing. There's no for sure thing. And Alan Green, you know, him looking at his shoelaces, I mean, that's some funny shit right there, man.
I think you're right. I think you're right. He does have one more fight in him, and that's why he's looking at his shoes trying to find that shit.
It's either that or he's really, I think he's either concerned about that. Maybe his shoes are untied or, damn, I think I, you know what? I put on the wrong color of shoelaces. Or he wanted one of those, you know, those, what do you call those, man, when you put the little ding-dongs on your shoelaces, so when you're moving, they shine, or ching, 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 ching.
Man, he gets hit, and he loses fucking color in his eyes, and he's like, let me look at my shoes.
If Duke gets hit with those things on his shoes, on his laces, all you're going to hear is ching.
Oh my god, man.
But you know, him facing Andre Ward is a good fight. And it may be a little bit of a tougher test for Green, but being that Green right now honestly wanted to be in this tournament, you know, and seeing that he wanted to be in this tournament, I'm telling you right now, when you got a guy that's hungry, they can be very, very dangerous, and that could be the possibility. But I want to talk about a little bit about Pascal wanting to face Chad Dawson. To me, really honestly, I think that's a bad fight for Pascal. I think Chad Dawson just takes it fairly easy. Chris?
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Chad Dawson's a better version of Jean Pascal. So if that's the case, then yeah, it's like you're running into a mirror image of yourself, but better. But Pascal, I don't know. I mean, he's I don't know, man. It's hard. It's really hard to say. I like Pascal. You know, I thought he looked good in that Diakonu fight. I didn't see the last Diakonu fight where he blew out his shoulder. But the first Diakonu fight he looked good in. And then, you know, he had that close loss to Froch. I don't know. I guess Dawson's a heavy favorite. But I want to see it because it's two of the best guys at the light heavyweight division. There's not much going on at the light heavyweight division aside from the Hopkins-Jones retirement tour. You know, so that's the best fight in that division that can be made, in my opinion.
Oh, man, that says a lot about a division. When you have Pascal and Chad Dawson, I mean, to say that's the best fight day, Tim, am I crazy about saying that? Is that, I mean, to say that's the best fight in that division, I don't know. Does that tell you that that division is a little shallow?
Well, yeah, it's shallow. I mean, it's obvious to see it's shallow. That's why yesterday we were talking about, or on Thursday, we were talking about what fights could be made. We were talking about, you know, Dawson moving down or Boutte moving up. But, you know, let's establish who's the man in the division. We should try to strive for that in all the boxing divisions, see who's the number one guy, and this fight should establish that, at least in my opinion.
The one thing I'd say about Chad Dawson and Pascal, you know, Chris is right. They do, you know, resemble each other a lot. But as you know, less of a, how do I say, less of a fighter, an overall fighter, Pascal is to Chad Dawson. The only difference between them really is that Pascal fights his ass off every time he fights. I don't really like him, but that dude, you know, when it's the final seconds of the round, he just swings for the fences, and that's the difference between them, you know. So he could just steal rounds off of that, and I think that's what makes an interesting fight for me.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Chad. I respect what he does. I think he's the most gifted. But I think I've said this before that, unfortunately, the bad part for Chad Dawson right now is he's in a division right now just like I would even like Roy Jones was in the same division where there was really nobody there for him to prove his greatness. You know, and unfortunately for Chad Dawson, he's got to dig deep to find somebody that can make him a superstar. You know, where, you know, where Roy was, he became a superstar being in a way more lively division, middleweight, and then he was able to make his name off of, like, you know, Hopkins and Tony and et cetera, et cetera. And they called him, before Roy Jones was called Superman Roy Jones, he was called Machine Gun Roy Jones. Where Chad Dawson, it's a little bit different. You know, there is really nobody out there. He fought Glenn Johnson, where he will never really honestly, in my opinion, get the credit, because even though Glenn gave him a run for his money for the first fight, the second fight really was clearly Dawson's turn. He had basically all the chips in his side of the table. And saying that, even if he was a fight Bernard Hopkins, again, fight fans would be saying, yo, you're fighting another dude that's walking around in a cane or strolling around that should be in a retirement home at this moment. What can Chad Dawson do? Now, Pascal, if I remember correctly, he's not a natural light heavyweight, Chris, right?
No, he fought at 168 probably a year or two ago. That's what, but he moved up at 175, you know, and actually he fought fraud for the title at 168. Close fight, but he ended up losing, and after that he jumped up to 175. So, but Dawson's not a big 175. You know, he's talked about moving down to super middleweight, so I don't think size is going to be much of a factor. That's probably going to be the least factor in this fight. You know, and you know, like Rob said, you know, Dawson gets kind of lazy in there between rounds. He takes rounds off. He doesn't fight an entire 12-round fight, or he hasn't shown it, you know. So if Pascal takes it for all 12 rounds...
He doesn't have to, though. I mean, really, in all honesty, he doesn't have to. And he's never shown
too damn skilled for his own good.
Yeah, you know, he's a lot better than a lot of the opponents that he steps into in the ring with, so that's why. Hey, before we go off the air, let's talk a little bit about, Chris, what's coming up, man, for the MMA world? What we got going on?
Well, the biggest news of the past week was, you know, the heavyweight champion, UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar's coming back because dude had, like, some intestinal disease. I forgot what it's called, but I guess he had a hole in one of his intestines, and they thought he might have to – his career was over, but I guess he had some miraculous recovery. So he'll be coming back in the summer. But aside from that, you know, next weekend we got a Strikeforce show going down. Nick Diaz, one of my favorite fighters, is fighting for a title. It's a pretty good card. Aside from that, Chris Cyborg, the female fighter, the woman that beat Gina Carano for the title. She's defending her title. And then Herschel Walker, old Heisman winner, old Dallas Cowboy, Minnesota running back, NFL running back, 47 years old, making his MMA debut on the card. You know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely something that's intriguing to me. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, why, though? I mean, come on, 47 years old. I mean, I see it on Howard Stern. You know, and you know, he was at the Staples Center. No, I'm sorry. He was at the Angie Award versus Mikkel Kessler. He was there. I saw him. I met him. And I was just thinking, like, really, in all honesty, was this a good move for Strikeforce to do? I mean, okay, Graham, yeah, he's got a following. He's got a name. But you guys have had the Kimbo Slice. You've had, Brock Lesnar, who's obviously the heavyweight champion of the world, and that obviously was a good bid for the UFC to sign him up. But eventually, I mean, come on. I mean, the people are going to be like, is this starting to be more of a gimmick? than an actual sport, Chris?
You know, right now this is Strikeforce. They're really trying to establish themselves as a challenger to the UFC, or at least the number two company out there. So they're trying to draw any kind of attention any way they can. You are going to get some backlash for it. They're not really looking long-term. They're just looking short-term as far as drawing eyes. I don't really know. There's no significance to this fight other than to get some public mainstream media attention, and it's working, you know. He's been on SportsCenter. He's been on ESPN, like you said, Howard Stern show. He's making the rounds. He's drawn more attention in this fight card than would otherwise. So in that aspect, it is a good move, you know. So, you know, as long as the rest of the product presents a good show, it'll speak for itself. You know, Herschel Walker is just there to draw names, you know. So it's a positive and a negative, but we'll see how it plays out for the company long term.
Okay, yeah. Obviously, a draw a name, but drawing a name to a point like the way other gimmicks have happened have always been sued for not being a very farewell in case of, like, you know, oh, you know what, it was, yeah, great turnout. But then eventually people figure it out. Like, listen, come on, this is a joke, you know? Why do this? The guy's 47 years old. I mean, you got to take a little bit in account of the guy's 47. What if something happens to him? You know, what? I mean, okay, I'm thinking maybe they're going to put him in with somebody that's not one of that. Obviously, they're not going to put him in with somebody that's a top elite of the MMA world, but do you... I mean, are they really thinking that this guy is going to be able to do something that nobody's been able to do at this moment in the MMA world at 47 years old? I mean, how much of a run can he have? I mean, how much of a run can he have for a couple of years in the MMA world? 3 years? Though he's 50? I doubt it.
You know, he can have a hop. He's not going to have a run. He can have a hop. Maybe one fight and that's it. We'd have a little toe hop or something like that. I don't know, get on a pogo stick and do something, because he ain't gonna do shit. That dude's, you know, it's just like you said, it's a gimmick. I don't think it's gonna make the sport look bad, to be honest. You know, if anything, this is where you can say, oh, well, you know, not anybody can do this sport, you know. Basically, you know, I'm not even gonna pay attention to it, really. I'm not watching the card for that. I'm just waiting to see Bobby Lashley do work, because Bobby Lashley is funny as hell when he fights.
Anyway, the other interesting bit of news out of the MMA was, you know, it's funny, Dana White, the president of the UFC, always talks about how boxing's dead, but they had a date scheduled for UFC, I believe it's 113, the event. It was a rematch between Lyoto Machida, the lightweight champion, and Mauricio Shogun, who was scheduled for May 1st. And now that, you know, Mosley Mayweather is being talked about for that date, he ended up pushing that event back a week, you know, and he's going on talking about boxing being, you know, not having their shit together and stuff. But if he didn't feel that boxing was a threat, and Mayweather, you know, in particular, there's no way he would have pushed his event back a week. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
How many events does he push back, though? Hasn't Dana White been pushing so many events back lately? Why does he do that, aside from the boxing competition? But, like, sometimes he pushes events back that really don't need to be pushed back.
No, he hasn't really done it. They've had fighters fall out and stuff, you know, and they schedule things prematurely. But this was solely based on the fact that Mayweather Mosley is most likely going to be on that date. And he knows that that's a much bigger, you know, event. It's probably going to get a lot more attention than any UFC
event. Well, yeah, definitely. That's a mega event right there. You know, even though Floyd Mayweather tried to really honestly discredited by saying, oh, well, you know, Mosley's lost. You know, he got beat by Cotto, and this guy gets beat by this person, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but in the boxing world, in the boxing community, this is a huge fight. This is a fight, really, honestly, a lot of people have been anticipating. Just like, you know, Manny Pacquiao. And really, the Manny Pacquiao versus Mayweather really was honestly not even as far as being anticipated as much as the Mayweather versus Mosley has been. That's been in the making. It's been in the stew for quite some time, bubbling up for a lot of us to want to see. You know, so
there's a big story behind this
one.
There's a bigger story behind this one, actually. That
the
Pacquiao Mayweather. You know, all you have for the Pacquiao Mayweather is you have Pacquiao who's been doing what Mayweather was supposed to do for a long time, he's doing it in a short span of time. And, you know, that's really the only build behind it, aside from the pound-for-pound thing. But, you know, Shane Mosley and Mayweather, they go way back from dominating the lightweight to the light welterweight to the, you know, welterweight. Then Shane would jump up to light middleweight and to fight these big guys that would fight at middleweight, you know. This story has been brewing up for so long, and, you know, it's an all-American showdown, you know, and it's all-American. You know, one guy that was being compared to Sugar Ray Robinson from the start of his career, you know, Shane Mosley had a big, big hype behind him coming up, and, you know, Vernon Forrest knocked that hype off his face with that right hand. But, you know, it's just been brewing up for a long time now. And, you know, now that Mosley has gotten that career high again with the Margarito win, Mayweather has, you know, for some reason managed to have this flotation device in his career where he's just been floating in this hype thing for, like, his whole career. You know, it's going to happen. People are going to be hyped, you know, especially JR, you know.
Yeah. Man, we got a big show for next week. We got Tommy the Duke Morrison coming through, you know, and I know I apologize for last Thursday. The guests, they call me after the show, and one of them called me in the morning and say, hey, man, apologize for not being able to make it because of the weather conditions, you know, and it sucks. You know, when you're going live, you can't not predict everything, and you know, it's kind of hard. You know, when you're trying to go live, I mean, definitely, it goes with everything in life. You cannot see what's going to happen in front of you every minute when you're living life, and that's exactly what leaving the ring's like. We just can't see every minute that's going to happen and stuff. But we do got Tommy the Duke Morrison scheduled in. We got Freddie Roach scheduled in, and then we got a surprise guest that is going to be calling in and talk a little bit to us about their career. I'm not going to announce who it is.
Are they active? Are they in it? Because I've been thinking about this shit all day. Is he an active fighter?
It's not a fighter. And it's
not. It's
not.
Oh, it's Vida Guerra. It's Vida Damn Guerra. You know her, man. Come on, now stop playing. You're going to give me her number. Stop playing, man. Yeah, I know you're going to give me her number and shit.
Dude, like I said, it's not a fighter. It's not a he. It's a she. Yeah, she's pretty well known. We'll find out on Thursday night when she calls in and talks a little bit about what's going on in the in her world. But yeah, I've got to say she's an active fight fan. And
how big is her breast size and how big is her butt? And I don't know.
Well, see, man. We'll see. If that's the guest that we're talking about.
Yo, Dave, man. Hey, while we're at it, you know, the other night I thought we actually had a good show. I like a lot of those questions you brought. And, you know, there's one name I forgot to mention. You had brought up a question, who would you like to see have a comeback this year? And, you know, a guy that I want to see, I'm interested in seeing how his year plays out, is a vicious Victor Ortiz. You know, he had that one comeback fight, and he was successful against Antonio Diaz. But I'm looking forward to seeing what this kid has to offer. And I read on ESPN.com yesterday, potentially they're looking at Nate Campbell next. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Rob has an opinion on that fight. What about y'all?
Man, I'm telling you, it's like it was once said by Strike Cards on this show, Nate Campbell's just not going to lay down. Man, Victor is going to put this motherfucker out like in 3 rounds. It's over.
Hold on. For you, not was this Chris. I know a guy on YouTube with that name, but he's a bit of a jackass. Hey, you know what? At least one, I know the same dude. That dude is a bit of a jackass.
Oh, man.
That's great. Man, you just gotta love it. Chris, look at Chris. I can see Chris. I can hear his teeth grinding right now.
Oh, dude, why don't y'all come and try to pin the tail on this donkey? I'll show you what's up.
You gotta admit it, Chris. You're kind of a dick. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, good. I keep it on the DL. I'm just gonna play the nice guy role, for, you know, for the fans.
Man, I'm so happy I haven't
He's
been
off.
Tracked down.
Sorry, Chris.
I think I'm the only dude who hasn't been tracked down on this show yet.
Hey, Lee won. I thought I was the only one that thought he was kind of a prick.
Yeah.
Well, come on, we can't leave out our man Blood. You know, I know he's listening. I know he's in bed. He's got to get up early to work tomorrow. But our boy Blood, he knows what it's like. You know, people get the wrong impression of him, but people would think he's friggin', you know, the hater, the madman, the racist, you know, anything bad that you think of, poor Blood's been pinned on.
Man, I'm glad I had him.
Yeah, man, you know we love you, dog. You know we love you, man.
Where's David Chen at? Is David Chen still on the line?
Huh?
Where's David Chen? Is he still on the line?
No, he hung up and stuff, man.
Damn,
I thought he was still on the line. And, huh?
We couldn't even get a goodbye?
No. Nope. My man, I think he was probably trying to get in, but we were discussing boxing. You know, Dave doesn't like to interrupt, man. He likes to let the program going through. And I was asking a question. I said, Dave, and he didn't respond. And I noticed that's when he had hung up and stuff. And, we had to continue. But, you know, this, like I said, this was not a scheduled show. We just did it. We said, let's get on the air, man. 3 minutes ago, I was talking to Chris. We were bullshitting about the fight. And I said, yo, let's just talk about it live on the air. Why not? You know, and this is what we do normally. Ran. If you know us personally, we do this all the time. We
Jessica Biel.
Nonstop.
It's Jessica Biel.
Jessica Biel. Oh, God.
Jessica Biel is on Thursday. That's who it is. I didn't know you knew Jessica Biel.
Not Jessica Biel. It's like, her name is Jessica, though. Her name
Jessica
Jessica
Alba.
Jessica Alba. I'll take that one. Hey, yo, another quick thing I want to talk about in the boxing.
No, wait a minute. I like Jessica Biel better, though. You know, she
what?
Got...
Oh, yeah,
you know
yeah,
that
man.
Jessica
I thought,
Biel, I put, you know
put
that
it on
Jessica
my Facebook
Biel
all
has,
the time.
Hey, listen. You know that Jessica Biel has actually a website dedicated strictly to her ass.
Really?
It's great. Yeah.
Rob's interest level. Also.
Drop the link on the chat room, please, because I am obsessed with her ass.
Oh, my God. It's
my girlfriend gets mad,
ring,
but
bro.
I can't even.
I haven't seen a UFC ring girl with an ass like Jessica Biel, brother. Unfortunately, it has not been, you know, one
Jessica.
Yet. I don't know. Maybe there is. I haven't seen her, though, yet. But then again, I don't watch a whole lot of UFC MMA cards, but Beal's definitely got it, man. I got, like, damn. Yeah, that movie where that dude, Adam Sandler, and I haven't even seen that movie. All I've watched, though, is when she's changing. That's the only thing I've ever watched.
Oh, yeah. Now, you got to watch, Blue Powder or something, Powder Blue, something like that.
Oh, man, I just watched that not too long ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a stripper in it. The movie sucks, but it's worth it for that.
Yeah, man. Oh, my God. I don't know how many times. I can't even say it on air, man. Oh, my God.
Just don't. Please.
Well, I guess I'm going to Blockbusters right now. You know, as soon as
we hang up.
I thought
it was on demand. If you got cable, it's on demand. That's why I caught it at, so.
Really? Okay,
yeah,
well, I guess I'm just going to the living room.
Real quick, before I forget, Brian Viloria. Lost his title last night.
I heard.
Collapsed afterward. Fortunately, it just ended up being because of dehydration, but I didn't even know he was fighting yesterday night. I was sure as hell shocked to hear that he lost his title.
Yep, his title, and like you said, due to dehydration, and kind of just put another stomp in his career because it's not the first time he's lost. You know, where does it really kind of leave him at this moment? Because there was talk of him possibly moving up to try to get some better fights.
Well, I mean, if you watch the fight, I was watching the fight with Oscar. Oscar stopped watching because it was a pretty boring fight. But Oscar went to go play Modern Warfare, and I kept watching the fight, and it just hit this round for some reason, around round 8 and stuff, where he just stopped. Like, he just completely stopped throwing punches. He was trying to move around, very sluggish movement, and you could tell that it was something beyond being gassed, because that's what Jessica Biel's ass does to you, but he really wasn't breathing heavy. He was just looking really sluggish, so you could tell he was getting weaker, and I was wondering what it was, and I turned it off like in round 10 or something like that, because I was like, oh, fuck it, they're going to give him the fight. And then my boy hit me up, he was like, oh, he got stopped. I was like, really? And then I turned it on, and he was just, the referee just stopped it. It was a pretty shitty stoppage, but, I was just shocked. I was like, wow.
Well, I'm going to have to go back and check it out and look at it and see exactly what happened, I don't know, but Brian, the Hawaiian puncher, has, when he did come out, because he came from the amateur background, had a lot of people following him, there was an aura that this guy was going to do something in the sport, and he was put in early with some really tough matches, and really, honestly, in my opinion, and I think a lot of hardcore fight fans, has not been able to live up to what he was supposed to do. So where does it now leave him at this moment? Does he get a rematch? Does he rethink his career? Or, I don't know, Chris, does he decide finally, dehydration or not, we don't really know. Does he decide, maybe I should just hang up these gloves? I think this is as far as I'm going to get at this moment.
What's funny is after his last fight, I don't remember who it was, but he ended up getting a spectacular win. And I know he was being mentioned as a possible showdown with Ivan Calderon later on this year. And I'm sure this fight, they didn't think he was going to lose, But after this loss, maybe he just needs to step up a division. I mean, if it was severe dehydration or exhaustion, whatever it was, maybe he just can't make the weight anymore. I don't want to jump the gun and say he should look to pack it in just yet. It sounds like he was just completely dehydrated from what I read and from what Rob's saying, that he just suddenly hit the wall. So maybe he just needs to jump up a division and can revitalize him. And he's still a young guy. He hasn't taken a lot of punishment in the ring. So it's really hard for me to say, in all honesty.
I think his last fight, the fight you're talking about, was against Solis, who was supposed to fight Calderon, too, a while back, that apparently him and Calderon have a grudge match or some shit like that, where they've been trying to make a stupid ass fight. Solis is garbage. Solis is garbage and has needed to retire for the past 5-6 years. Still fighting with that Jerry Curl juice.
All right, brother. Well, it's close to that time for us to log off and we got our schedule show on Thursday. Like I said, this was just a random thing. You'd be tuning in. And I appreciate the guys that are tuning in and listening. We didn't, we didn't advertise this or anything like that. We didn't go on, YouTube and
our multiple accounts, post it up, leave comments,
or anything like that. We didn't advertise it like that or blast it on our Twitter or Facebook. It was just spur moment type of thing. Appreciate the people that did come through and chopped it up with us and hang out and talk boxing and MMA. Always appreciate that, man. Just wanted to get on and just talk a little bit. We always do this all the time, so we figure why not share it with the rest of the world that tune in and listen to Leaving the Ring, that follow Leaving the Ring all the time. But Thursday night, like I said, Tommy the Duke Morrison, we do got Freddie Roach scheduled in, and we got a surprise guest for the Leaving the Ring people. Hey, talk to you guys on Thursday night, brothers.
Peace
Always out. A pleasure. Good night.